Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Dave, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Michael. It's not just me. It's Dave and about, 18 or 20 really beautiful people sitting here on the west porch of the monastery.
That's wonderful. Sounds very peaceful.
Yeah, it does. The sun's going down. We just had a really nice day. It's a good thing.
Wonderful. Hey, tell me about peace practices.
Well, what we thought we'd do is we get everybody here to tell you what their favorite peace practice is.
Sounds great.
I'll start off with mine, then I'm going to pass the phone around if that works for you.
Yeah, that's great.
My favorite peace practice is every night before I fall asleep, I remember everything that I'm grateful for.
Wow. Every night before you fall asleep, everything that you're grateful for.
Yep. And here's somebody else.
And at the other end of the day, my favorite peace practice is that when I first wake up in the morning, as I'm lying there waking up, I have a set of gratitude statements that I say. I put my hands over my heart and run through them, and that way that's what I wake up into every day.
Wow. Gratitude at the beginning and at the end of the day.
Hi, Michael. My favorite peace practice is, and I do this throughout the day, is going to the breath and feeling the gratitude and saying thank you.
Great. I just did it.
I work in a hospital, and I have a quote, one of the peace quotes, mounted on the door of my office as I walk out, and I'm going to mangle it, but it's something like, peace does not mean being in a place where there's no pain or chaos, but being in the midst of these things and being calm in one's heart. And then at the bottom of it, I wrote in, I'm peace storming. So every time I walk out of my office, I am prepared for whatever is called for and do my best to bring a feeling of peace and calm in my heart to that.
That's good.
Hi, Michael. My favorite peace practice is reading the daily peace quotes and sending them to people that I love.
Great.
Michael, I've got a favorite for this week, which is I periodically ask myself, who's got my breath?
Because who's got your breath?
Yeah, who's got my breath? Because it has me check in with my breath. If I'm not completely present and centered, my breath is being held somewhere.
Yes.
Michael, my favorite peace practice is almost every night when I'm walking home, I meet with my best friend in the whole world, my mentor, and I just let this person talk about her whole day and everything that she has to say and just let her be listened to.
That's great.
Hi, Michael. One of my favorite things is when I'm out in the world, whether I'm at the grocery store, the bank, or whatever, is to just make a point of relating to the person that's helping me, and a lot of times through humor. And it's just this heart connection that happens a lot of times, and it brings me. It feels like it brings me peace, and I sense that it's something that the other person gets something out of, too.
Great.
My favorite peace practice is checking in with my brow, between my hairline and my eyebrows, to see if it's crinkled. If it is, I go, okay, it's crinkled, and it relaxes, and then I look less angry.
That's great. It's a good thing no one's looking at you anyway, so that's good.
Hi, Michael. My favorite peace practice is every day I go for a walk, preferably in nature somewhere. And during the walk, the only thing that I do is just practice breathing. And that's just such a kind thing to do for myself. And I every day it's possible, that's what I do.
Great.
Hey, Michael, this is Alex. I have a vibrating watch that's set for 17 minutes. Every 17 minutes, I say to myself, thank you, and I love you.
Wonderful. I love it.
Michael, my favorite, well, gosh, I have so many favorite peace practices, but the one that's occurring to me right at this moment is starting every day with sitting meditation.
Mm, yeah, great idea.
One of my favorite is from the Making Peace with Money class. I write down gifts received for that day and gifts given for that day, and the lines kind of blur. It gets like, well, was that given? Was that received? It's just, and it's, I'm always amazed how much was given and received each day.
Yes.
Thank you.
Michael, one of my favorite peace practices is writing down the quotes from Transform Your Life. And when I get one that really works on me, I carry it with me and I keep it in my wallet or in my pocket and I just read it. Right now I'm carrying the one, Be the Change You Want to See in the World, and I'm trying to choose that instead of other things that I might choose. Thank you.
Great.
One of my favorite peace practices is yoga and just being with my breath, having reminders throughout the day to be with my breath and really be in my body.
Great.
Michael, one of my favorite peace practices recently is to, as often as I can remember, listen to whoever is talking as if I was going to have to repeat their every word. And,
wow.
And I find that that really gets me into the world in a good way.
Great.
I also enjoy the practice that was already mentioned of really interacting with each person that I encounter that are kind of strangers out in the world. And also having a favorite reassurance to offer any part of myself who gets anxious or nervous or whatever during the day.
Great.
Something that I'm practicing is noticing when annoyance starts to come up and just checking in at that point and saying, gosh, what can I be grateful for about this annoyance and where else can it take me?
Great, kind of a shifted perspective.
Hi, Michael. A lot of what's been said is also true for me. And one thing that's not been said is I'm aware sometimes of a pushing energy. And when I feel that pushing energy, I kind of remind myself that the world doesn't depend on me, and it allows me to kind of get a little bit of lightness from that and this remembrance just to go back to my breath and relax. And the other thing is I carry a water bottle, and my favorite one right now actually says on it, I bottle my own water, and that always just kind of makes me smile, too. It's just one small thing that I feel like I can tangibly do.
Great.
Michael, one of my favorite peace practices is playing with the dogs. Because it opens my heart and I project just a lot of goodness and innocence. And so I appreciate that.
Yes, very therapeutic for me also.
Hi, Michael. One of the things I like to do is during my lunch, I go outside. I work in an office, so I always take the time to go outside. And it seems that whenever I, actually when the time comes up, it's just I look forward to it. I go outside, I look at the trees, I look at something, and it just puts everything in perspective for me, and it makes it makes me kinder throughout the day.
Great.
Hey, Michael.
Hi.
My favorite practice is to... in the morning after I've walked the dogs and fed the cats, to curl up on my bed with my most peaceful cat and read the Transforming Your Life quote.
Wow. Yeah, that's good.
I'm going to see if there's anyone else. Yep.
Well, a lot of mine have already been said, but one thing I make a point of doing is saying thank you to people. Even if I'm doing something rote, like sending something in that's just a form letter, I write thank you on it, or when somebody does something for me that's standard, I just make a point of saying thank you to show appreciation.
Great.
We got one more.
Michael, my second favorite peace practice is stop, dropping, and breathing.
Everybody's second favorite, I think.
Yeah, drop and breathe.
Michael, let me make sure everyone's had a chance. Who wants that? Yeah? All right, well, that's what we're up to here.
Well, I wouldn't want you to miss out on mine.
Oh, okay, great. What is it, Michael?
As we're including all in this conversation. I record the Transform Your Life quote into my phone in the morning, and then I take it to work with me, and then I type it into my daily plan, so it's always in front of me.
All right. That's great. That's neat.
Great, and everyone else, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay. Take care.
Yeah, take care. Have a great show.
Okay, we will. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm wondering, what is going on the west porch of the monastery? What an extraordinary group of people are assembled there.
Yes.
Who are those amazing people? Do you know?
Yes.
Is it a state secret, or can we know who they are?
It's a group of people on retreat, and they're practicing facilitation.
Practicing facilitation.
Yes.
I suspected that because I actually recognized quite a few of those voices.
Yes.
Mhm. So from around the country, some of our and local. Stellar facilitators gathered together to deepen their practice and sharpen their skills and just enjoy Sangha.
Yes. And I'm a part of that, and it's been an extraordinary experience for me.
Oh, good. Good. There's nothing better than practice and nothing better than practicing with Sangha.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I have a favorite peace practice, and I suspect that there is someone who did not speak to that question, because I was kind of counting here as we were going through. One of my favorite peace practices is to create these lists of things that I want to be focused on.
Yes.
So that I get so many of them that I can't remember them. And so I really have to pay really close attention to remember them all. And, of course, each time I focus on each one of them, then that's the experience that I have. So I like to, you know, try to include something for the mind, something for the emotion, something for the body, you know, the breath, the relaxation, those sorts of things. But I just love that. Going through it, and then, I forgot the one about it. Then I go back through the whole thing again. It can get very time-consuming, and I really enjoy that. Yeah.
And very peaceful.
Very peaceful, yeah. Yeah. Good. Well, that was fun. Thank you for that.
So I'm the one who didn't. I'm not on the West Porch team. I'm on the Downtown Making the Radio Show Happen team.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't get to say my peace thing, which is that each morning I have a meeting with Jen, and actually quite similar to what you were just describing. We have a little check-in about how things are going and intentions for the day.
Aha, lovely. Sangha. It's another Sangha moment. You know, several people talked about that in different ways, whether it's the Sangha here of this person. And, of course, in our practice, we know this person is not one person but a whole bunch of people. So there's that Sangha gathering, and then there is the Sangha gathering each time we encounter someone who appears to be else. And so we're always in a Sangha situation bringing peace.
Yes. And it occurred to me, you were talking about lists of of practices, it occurred to me that I could make a list of everything that was shared tonight as a peace practice and go through that list.
Yes, yeah. And then add to it things like, you know, a conversation with the mentor about everything that happened during the day, or, you know, everything that I'm grateful for the day, or, you know, it's just, oh my God, you know, this could become a full-time thing.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's what we're going for.
It is indeed. Jerry, we have a couple of callers in the queue here.
Good.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Trish and Rosa from Chico.
Hi.
We called back.
Very, very, very good. So, tell me, gals, what was this week like?
It was very good. I've been doing my homework, and I haven't had a lot of fears, but when I do, before I shake them away, I think about where it's scaring me in my body.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's in my stomach, in my head, and in my arm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, now, so the first thing is, you haven't felt as many fears.
I haven't had as many fears.
Yeah. What? Anything you think about that, or?
I think it's because I don't know why I haven't been having so many fears, because I haven't.
Uh huh. Well, I have an idea about that, and that is that when we are looking for something like fear, it's much harder to find it than when we are off doing other things and it sort of sneaks up on us. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, if you go into your bedroom and you don't turn on the light and you go sit on your bed, that would be sort of one experience of maybe it could be scary to do that.
Yeah. Like it might be scary to be all alone in the house when it's raining and the trees are shaking and nobody's in the house and it's raining and the trees are blowing and it's windy.
That would be scary. Yeah. And yet, if you were to say, okay, there's a big storm going on, I'm going to turn on all the lights in the house, and I'm actually going to call somebody to come over and be with me. And then we're going to pop popcorn, and we're going to sit around and eat popcorn and talk about the things we enjoy most in life. That would probably be way less scary than being alone in the house with a storm going on and all the lights are off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of recognizing the situation. So this is something that could be scary. So I'm going to go into this looking for where the fear might be and doing whatever I can do to make myself feel as safe and comfortable as I can feel under the circumstances. Yeah? Things are a lot less scary. And I project that since you're a good homework doer, you were paying pretty close attention this week.
Yeah,
and, yeah, and because of that, there was less that scared you. Yeah. And so when there were fears, did you notice how that happened? What kinds of things were there that were scary?
Yeah, I guess maybe monsters might have been some part of it.
Which might have been?
Just like being in my house alone, I think, is also getting a little scary.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so did you had that time that actually happened where you were in the house by yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And when that happened, you felt it in your stomach?
Anything?
It does kind of in my head, my stomach, and my stomach, I guess. And my arms.
Mostly in your stomach?
Yeah.
It low in your stomach or high in your stomach?
High.
above your belly button or below your belly button?
Above my belly button.
Above your belly button. Okay. Yeah. So that part of your body just kind of tightens up?
Yeah.
Mhm. Yep, that's the one. So it can be really helpful to just breathe and let the body relax, because it is harder to feel stressful or fearful or anxious or that sort of thing when the body is really, really relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what do you need to hear?
I guess sometimes I need to hear my mom reassuring me or myself reassuring me.
Uh-huh.
Things aren't true and that I'm okay. And there's no scary ghosts, there's no scary whatever.
Diseases.
Yeah, or ghosts or diseases or monsters, I think, have also been getting to me.
Uh-huh.
There's people in the house, it seems like. I think that at night sometimes, the reason why I have my purple light on is if I hear a creak, I mean, my pink light on, because if I hear a creak, I think, oh, it's someone in my house. And then I get freaked out.
Uh-huh.
If it's like at 2 in the morning, so I just automatically turn the light on.
Yeah. And that helps.
Yeah, it does. But then I have to remember to turn it off before I go to sleep.
Right. Yeah. Although, there are worse things than sleeping with the light on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I really need the light on, my parents don't really mind, but
right.
They like me to turn it off before I go back to sleep.
Yeah, if you can.
Yeah.
So that's good. You've got a little plan going there. You know what to do. You know what you need to take care of yourself.
Yes. The reason why I started giggling was because my cat just stepped on me. Right in the belly button.
I see. Pointing out that place where you could be afraid, but right now it tickles.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. Very good. Okay. Well, are you up for trying this for another week or so?
Yes.
Okay. Does it feel like it's helping?
Yes.
It's good to have a project, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I like
it. Oh, and we're doing some walking meditation.
Uh-huh.
We went to Nancy to see if she could help a little. She suggested walking meditation.
Oh, very nice. And you're enjoying that?
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, very good. All right. A peace practice. And, you know, that is really the start of the show. All the people were talking about the peace practices. And, you know, there's a big connection there. You do walking meditation and you're breathing and you're with yourself and helping the body relax and be comfortable and have a sense of enjoyment. And we go to that place of feeling peaceful. If we're not focused in that kind of way, you know, then oftentimes the mind is up there making mischief. You know what I mean? Making trouble, thinking about things that starts in conversations about, well, what about this and what's going to happen about that? And you know, this is going to be, and pretty soon it's got you feeling anxious and scared and nervous and that sort of thing. So practicing, training ourselves to be able to let that conversation go, just come back to the breath and the body and feel the body relax and just feel the feet on the ground and that sort of thing. It's really very, very helpful. It'll serve you well all of your life.
It sure helps me.
Right. You're a little older and you can attest to it, huh?
Yeah. She's getting a much earlier start with all this stuff than I had.
Oh, my God.
I wish I had.
Oh, don't we all wish we had started at that age? Yes.
But I'm glad I started it when I did.
Yes, and quite frankly, she's a little ahead of where I was when I was that age. Well, let's face it, a lot ahead. So, you know, that's just a blessing of birth, I think.
Yeah.
Mommy, what's good about?
I think it's very helpful. It's very helpful.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, you gals keep us posted, huh?
Okay, we will. Thank you so much, Sherry.
Can we call you next week?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Keep paying attention.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thanks,
bye.
Sherry. Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi. Thanks for joining us. It's Trish and Rosa. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to have a sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right. Thanks.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by VoiceBusters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have several more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is George.
Hey, George.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, I'm breathing.
Very good.
yeah, I just needed to call in and contact, get some support from Sangha for what I'm going through right now. My wife and I sold our home of 20-some years, and where I had a big garden, and was next to the woods and next to a creek that I swam in, and it's been much harder than I thought it would be to let go of. And one of the complications was that it was something that my wife was more interested in doing, moving out of the area, than I was. And as a result, I'm letting go of some friends and things like that, at least the proximity to certain people and things that I was involved with. So it's been extremely difficult. It's been like I've been experiencing it like a loss.
I was going to ask you if grieving might be a good term to describe this process.
Well,
good
that's,
word.
Yeah, I think that is a good word. And I think the whole experience has been kind of numbing. I noticed that it was hard for me to go through any kind of emotional letting go I mean, the best thing I could do was kind of walk around the property, and I noticed that I had this experience of kind of reaching out to the trees and the plants that I had worked with over the years and just kind of wishing them well, telling them to be healthy and to grow strong. And in doing that, I just sort of broke down and cried. And
When did this happen, George? When did you move?
We just closed on the house 2 days ago.
Oh my gosh.
Monday. No, today's Tuesday. It was yesterday. Excuse me. So the whole thing has kind of just reawakened these feelings of anxiety and depression that I've cycled in and out of all my life, and I'm noticing that it's not so. It's well. First of all, you know, the voices are saying, "Well, this is unacceptable. I mean, you should be able to let go. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where you live or what you do."
Here's the deal. It doesn't matter where you live or what you do. They're going to be there to try to make you miserable.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's the part that we can know.
Yeah, yeah. And they're for sure jumping on this situation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, get a guy when he's down. And then
yeah.
Just stomp on his heart.
Yeah, that's really what it feels like. And, you know, it's been, and I've noticed that I've gotten sucked into playing the blame game, you know, blaming my wife for wanting to move and blaming her for the fact that we had to sell the house and, you know, move away and so on. And we don't even know where we're renting a townhouse in another area about an hour away, but, you know, we don't. It's not anything, I mean, it's not where we eventually want to move to.
So you're not going to anything. You're not going, it's not like we're going to sell that place. Yes, we loved
mm-hmm.
it, but we're going to go to this other place that we've always wanted to be in. You
right.
left a place that you love to go nowhere.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. And not completely like that. I mean, the area we live in is kind of conservative, and you know, it's understandable why my wife wants to move away, and I even share some of those feelings. But still, it's been kind of like a death, you know, experiencing it as a huge loss. And at the same time, there is this part of me. There is this sense of, I can feel it every once in a while. This sense of openness and freedom,
possibility,
and a possibility, yeah, and there's a desire to be in that place, you know, to be in that place of letting life, you know, live through me, rather than, you know, trying to hold on to the bank while the river is flowing, you know, and being kind of dashed against the side of the bank and trying to hold on and no,
He is. You know, the guy who didn't want to go swimming in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want to be in the river. He doesn't care where the current is going. You know, letting go is not his idea of a good time. None of this is his idea.
Mm-hmm.
He was happy where he was, doing what he was doing. And
mm-hmm.
so...
And it was, yeah.
To let him grieve that seems really kind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet, what you're also feeling is there's somebody else who says, okay, well... you know, I might not even have thought of it, but by golly, here I am in the river, and I'm kind of curious about where this is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so to let him be excited about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not really a choice between the two, is it? Although, you know, it might be fun, since it doesn't sound like there's, you know, anything else in particular that you need to be focused on right now. You could sort of give each one of them a half hour out of every hour.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, let the fellow who is grieving think about the place and the good times and what he did there and how he would have been happy to stay there for the rest of his life, you know, really let him have that experience. And then next half hour, give it to the fellow who's living in the world of possibility.
Yeah, that's kind of what's been happening. I think that the there's a real desire to escape from the pain of the whole thing, you know, to escape from the depression and the anxiety that's come up around it or that's been triggered by it.
Somebody has that desire.
Mm-hmm.
Not the fellow who's grieving.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a desire to escape from that.
Mm-hmm.
I would project too, George, that part of it, that the part of what makes this so difficult is a history of depression.
Yeah. Oh,
so
sure.
When somebody is, it's hard for those of us with that particular blessing sometimes to tell the difference between, hey, I am legitimately sad because this is a legitimately sad thing to be going on, and this is depression, which has nothing to do with content of life.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of a double whammy because it happened at the same time that I usually, or historically, have gone into a kind of a depressive, anxious period, you know, in the fall. So it kind of coincided almost like identically, exactly, with that time. So it's sort of like, you know, a double.
Yeah.
Hit twice.
Yeah. And
knocked
so,
down.
You know what might, it's just something to consider, what might be helpful is to, of course, job one is use those voices as a signal to drop them and get back to something else. But to just stay in a place of, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This could be.
Oh yeah.
This could be a traditional annual slide into depression, and this could just be that I'm grieving the loss of the life that I used to have, and I'm in transition, and I don't know. I'm not gonna decide it's this or it's that or it's something else. I'm just gonna practice with this,
mm-hmm.
which is the. You know, I'm going to spend this amount of time on this, and then this amount of time on this, and then
mm-hmm.
I'm going to do whatever else it is that needs to be done in life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, a kind of a little monastic schedule for emotion. You know,
mm-hmm.
during this period of time, I'm going to focus on this. During this period of time, I'm going to focus on this. And when that period of time is over, I'm going to be doing this. And that's where my attention is going to go. That's what I'm going to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be hard, and I'll forget, and I'll get caught up, but that's what it is. So to write it out, you know,
uh-huh.
What your schedule is going to be, you know, do it a week at a time, and then check in after a week.
I mean, my schedule of doing
yep.
what exactly?
Processing. So you're going to, if you do it, however you want to break it down, you know, you
mm-hmm.
a half hour, an hour, you know, morning, afternoon, whatever seems to work with your energy system. But you're going to be with that part of you for
mm-hmm.
that period of time, and then you're going to consciously
okay.
shift into another perspective and attend
mm-hmm.
to that person for that period of time. And then when it's time for you to do whatever else it is that you do that is not particularly an emotional kind of, you know, it doesn't really call for a lot of attending to anybody's emotion. You know, maybe you need to bring in the guy who's just going to get stuff done or get through the list of chores or whatever
mm-hmm.
it is, and you're going to bring conscious awareness to that rather
mm-hmm.
than turning it over to conditioned mind to make decisions about how you're going to be and how you're going to feel based on its interpretation of the sensations in your body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right, because the sensations in my body are going to...
Mm.
There's
not
no
serve
control
you.
Over those.
Yeah.
I mean, they just... they come up when they come up. And
yeah, and conditioned mind.
Whatever, and yeah.
Conditioned mind is right there to put its interpretation on it and then send you down that pathway. So you, now you're, you know, you're really aware of what's going on. You've done this so many times. It's not like you're avoiding anything by not following that path one more time, you know. So this is a time to really practice with making conscious choices and decisions and continuing to practice turning your attention away from where you don't want it to be and back to where you do want it to be. All right?
Whatever the feelings may be at the time.
That's right, because each one of these guys has their time in your day. Okay? The one who's grieving has his time. The one who is kind of excited and optimistic about this has his time.
All right. That's helpful.
Yeah. And then see who else needs to be there. Probably somebody needs to find the next place to live or what you're going to do next or, you know, whatever that is.
Yeah. No, it'd be a very interesting journey.
Yeah. If you take charge of it. If you take charge of the trip, it's going to be a very interesting journey. If you lie back and let conditioned mind take charge of the trip, it's not going to be an interesting journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to rise off my bed of anxiety and depression and take charge, but that will be the practice.
Yes, as it always is. Right?
All right.
Yeah, as it always is. Whatever is going on, we are called upon to rise above it, get back to center, make the decisions and choices that are going to care for the human.
All right.
Well, stay in touch.
Thank you. I will.
All right. Good. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air, Sherry Huber. Sherry, I like that reminder to take care of the human.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're a dad of little people. And you know that there are just no times when you can go, all right, guys, you're on your own. You know, try not to need anything, because I'm going to be doing other things. Yes, I mean, on a certain level, you guys go play while I, whatever it is. But you're there, and if they need something, you know that your first job is to care for them. And that doesn't change for us. Just because we're in a big body and we think of this myself as something that is kind of here to serve me, be ignored most of the time, abused when I feel like it, that's a wrong perspective.
Yeah.
This human incarnation is here for us to learn to minister to.
Yeah. Reverence is the word that comes up as you talk.
Yeah. To honor, to serve. That's where we can learn all of that. It's the most immediate place for us it's right there all the time. It's right there always needing to be remembered and cared for. And the thing, of course, that is so important for us to get is, it's not mine. It doesn't belong to me.
Can you say more about that?
Yeah, that ego would say, you know, this is my life. This is my body. I'll do with it as I want. Was I just telling that story on the radio about, I think it's Robert Louis Stevenson? He's going along and this guy is abusing his dog, and Robert Louis Stevenson interferes, you know, stops the guy, and the guy says, hey, it's my dog, I'll do with it as I want. And Robert Louis Stevenson says, no, it's God's dog, and I'm here to protect it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good image for us. You know, this is God's human, and it's my opportunity to care for this creature. Not indulge, not spoil, not even prefer. Care for.
Yes, care for. I like that.
Bring kindness to. Have compassion for. Learn generosity in relation to.
Yes. Yes. Sherry, we have a couple more callers here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Laura calling from Hawaii.
Hey, Laura.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
I just wanted to call in and express my deep, deep gratitude for this practice. And what I have been looking at for the last couple of years is my resistance and my aversion. And I actually grew up with an aversion to dogs. So, and as I lost more and more vision, a number of people suggested to me that I might be interested in getting a guide dog. And my immediate reaction was, no, 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 never in a million years.
And can I just stop you here?
Uh-huh.
I tell you, isn't life perfect?
Totally.
Completely perfect. You would grow up with an aversion to dogs,
yes,
which I project everybody listening, 99.44% of them will go, wow. Okay? But you grew up with an aversion to dogs and then slowly over time lost your sight.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that the logical, reasonable thing is to have a dog.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And I can remember being at the monastery when one of the dogs was sick and or healing from some surgery or something, and so it was with Jen all the time. And people would come up and, like, stroke this dog and be so, and I just thought, oh, my God, they're touching dogs. I mean, they're touching this dog, like, physically. That's how big my aversion was. And so I decided to look at this and got in touch with the parts of me who'd been traumatized by dogs when I was young and who took on other people's beliefs about dogs and all this kind of stuff. And then at one point, and again, life is so perfect, just became willing to do whatever the work was so that I would at least be open to exploring the possibility of getting a dog. And so that was an interesting journey, and I'm just looking at this most amazing dog who's been a part of my life for 6 months now and realizing how much I am learning from her and how much more open I am to life. And, I mean, I thought it was just, you know, well, I'm going to be more independent and I'll be able to go where I want and not have to, you know, like, stay home at night when it's dark out and stuff like that, but it's just so heart-opening in so many ways.
She is a bodhisattva.
Okay, what can you just say a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, so bodhisattva, it's a long, drawn-out definition that, you know, would still not be terribly illuminating, so I'll tell you a little story, okay?
Thanks.
Guy is going across the desert. He's way, way out there. It's rugged. He's really getting to the point of not being sure that he's gonna make it. But he knows a lot of people cross this desert, and there must be a way to get across it. And so he's determined he's just gonna just keep on going until he gets to some kind of sign of something or dies. And so he's going along, and all of a sudden he looks up and he thinks, what in the world? And what he's looking at is a wall. And he looks on to the left, and it's that wall extends as far as he can see. And he looks to the right, and it extends as far as he can see. And he thinks, now this is just not possible. I mean, how can this be here? And, oh, my God, what is going to happen to me? I cannot possibly turn around and go back the way I came. I'll never make it. And so he decides to see if he can get over it. And so there he is, and he's working, he's struggling, he's working, he's climbing, he's clawing, and finally he gets up to the top of this thing. He looks over it, and oh my God, he is looking at the Garden of Eden. It is paradise. It is beyond anything he would ever be able to imagine. It is so beautiful. And just as he's getting ready to dive over into this, he thinks about all those people who are coming across that desert and how frightened they might be and how lost and how weakened and how whatever from making that huge journey. And what if they don't realize that this is there? What if they can't, what if they get there and they can't make it to the top? And he decides that what he'll do is just wait there on the top of the wall and guide those who are coming behind him across into paradise. That's a bodhisattva.
Wow.
That's
oh, that
is
such a beautiful story.
And can you see how that would describe her?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Came to be with you.
Yeah.
To open your heart.
And I hope to someday become the kind of person she thinks I am.
Well, here's what I'm betting. You
okay.
are already the person she knows you are.
Mm.
And she's probably hoping someday you really get that.
Oh. Thank you. And just, deep, deep gratitude for this practice.
I know what you mean. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Hug each other for me.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Hugh. Sherry, that's a very touching story to me.
Yeah. All of it, huh?
Yes, yes.
Bodhisattvas, the bodhisattvas that come into our lives to point the way.
Yes, yes.
I
project that onto many people in my life. Sherry, we're going to have a sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
By Trish Bruxford Colligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
One few bathed in an ocean of rose.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I wanted to mention a couple things on the calendar.
Oh, great.
Coming up is a very exciting email class, What You Practice is What You Have. That's on November 9th, and the last day to sign up is November 7th, which is this Saturday.
I'm kind of excited about that myself.
Yes, me too. And the second part of that is the New Year's retreat at Santa Sabina, which is December 28th to January 2nd, and that will be on the same topic. So it's a great 1-2 combination.
Yes, yes, indeed. We are going to be having what we practice.
Great.
And we're going to be practicing great things.
Wonderful. I'm looking forward to it. Also coming up is a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat at the Monastery, November 14th to 21st. You'll be in Berkeley for an evening talk on Sunday, November 15th. And then the next Saturday is something new and exciting, which is a one-day at-home working meditation retreat, which will be guided by the monks.
I think that is just the most brilliant thing that ever came to Zen practice.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there are so many things that are happening in practice now that are possible for us because of this modern age that we live in. All the technology that makes Sangha, far-flung Sangha, much closer than we would have ever imagined. And this, to be able to do a retreat at home with Sangha, with the monks, oh my gosh.
It's a good deal.
It's genius. Yep. I'm going to do it.
Great. And the last thing I want to mention is that you'll be talking about We Share One World, and that's on Saturday, December 12th in the morning at the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment in San Jose.
Yes, one of my favorite places.
Yes, very beautiful. And, Sherry, we have three more callers here, and we have about 13 minutes.
We shall do our best.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
This is Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Hi, Sherry.
How you doing? What's going on? Let me ask a better question. What's going on?
Well, okay. I've been fine. I've been listening to the call. I've been absorbing, and then all of a sudden there are tears, and I don't know what they are.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know if I can do this.
Bet you can. We're not in any hurry here.
Been in the desert. I don't know what's going on.
Does it
just
matter?
Coming up.
Huh?
Let me...
You don't know what's going on
like
in the big picture of your life, or you don't know what's going
on
with the emotions?
Yeah, I don't know in either one. But this reaction that I'm having, I don't understand it.
Uh-huh. Well, do you need to?
It's just embarrassing.
Uh-huh. Because?
I'm not in control.
Uh-huh. Well, you never are. So there is that comforting awareness. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. We like to think we're in control, but in fact, we're not. So here somebody is feeling some emotion, and somebody else thinks that's embarrassing. So we can guess that that person who feels that emotion probably doesn't get to do it often.
Oh, no. No, no, no. No. Doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
So let me speculate in this way. You're going along in life, and you are keeping it together. And if you're like most folks, you have a kind of a little repertoire of things that you do to keep it together, so that egocentric karmic conditioning feels like it's in control, and it's, you know, it's got a grip, and it's doing okay. Then you tune into the radio show, and you're listening to your fellow Sangha talking about stuff, and here we are in this situation. And somebody who has been not keeping it together but being kept under wraps suddenly finds an opening to be how she actually is feeling.
I want to call and say that I'm doing well.
And
that
why? Is there a points system here that I don't know about? I mean, what difference does it make?
I had conversations with you often in my head.
Uh-huh. Am I wise?
Sometimes.
Sometimes just annoying, huh?
Well, not helpful.
Uh-huh, yeah. I know. I have that same reaction to myself often.
And, you know, I kind of stockpile questions to ask. And there aren't any of them coming up at the moment. Of things that would be...
Let me ask you this then. What is it that we're going for in this is going to be a big clue in this question, okay? What is it that we're going for in awareness practice? I expect that the answer is contained in the question. So what are we going for in awareness practice?
We're not really going for anything.
Yeah. But if we were, might we say what we're going for in awareness practice is awareness? That what we're practicing here is awareness. And so it doesn't actually matter what a person is aware of as long as a person is aware. I mean, technically, it doesn't matter if they're not aware. It's just life is so much harder.
Yes. There seems to be awareness, and then there's kind of awareness.
Yes.
Like mock awareness.
Well, if here you call into the show, and there's a lot of emotion there. Now, from conditioned mind's perspective, that's not a good thing, because conditioned mind, egocentric karmic conditioning, would like people to believe that the right people don't experience emotion, and they certainly don't experience what would be called inappropriate emotion, like on a radio show. Okay.
And no, it's pretty much a nightmare.
Pardon me?
No, that would be one of my greatest nightmares.
Yeah. And so from the point of view of conditioned mind, you're just really doing it all wrong. And yet,
yes.
From the point of view of awareness practice, are you aware of what's going on? Are you aware of what conditioned mind is telling you about it? Are you aware of how you're feeling in reaction to what's going on?
Yes.
Are you aware of the scramble in your mind to try to come up with, to try to figure it out, to try to understand it? Are you aware of all of that?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. then it seems to me, from the perspective of awareness practice, this is being quite a success.
Not stopping the emotion, though.
Well, it's not emotion stopping practice. That would be another thing. It's awareness practice. Pardon me?
You said cold words are nonsense.
Say that again?
All words are striving toward understanding as opposed to striving toward clarity.
Yeah. You think?
Yeah.
So if you get to a place of clarity about where you are, wouldn't that seem to be a good outcome for any little segment of practicing awareness that we would want to highlight?
I didn't hear what you said.
I'm having a heck of a time hearing you.
I could hear you saying something, but I couldn't hear it.
I see. So we're both having the same experience. I think one sort of spiritual and the other technological.
Yeah.
We're not sure which is which. So if you get to a place of clarity about where you are in any little, you know, little snapshot that we could have of life, does that seem like a positive result of awareness practice, a benefit of awareness practice?
It's a lot more fun.
Yeah. And can you feel that you have disidentified?
I can feel that I'm looking with my mind to see if I'm disidentified.
Uh-huh. Which means you're not believing what it's telling you, and therefore you can have a sense that very possibly you are disidentified. Not that it's not working just as hard as it can work right now to get you back again. But the very fact that you could use a phrase like more fun. is an indication. Yeah?
I mean, yeah.
And there it is. That's the whole deal right there. Get all twisted up in conditioned mind, believing what it's telling us, trying to figure it out, trying to... Yeah. And then in that, just that glorious, delicious moment, little shift happens, and we're no longer caught by it. Little distance. Have that fresh breeze of disidentification wafting through. And that's all. Nothing's changed.
No.
Yeah, Nothing has changed. Except
the cup is still here.
Except everything is completely different.
And there's more energy to do it with.
That's right. That's why, again, you know, I'm sure I've said this to you any number of times. Or you've heard me say this in retreats any number of times. The ultimate Zen response. Whatever. Whatever. You are an emotional wreck.
Yep.
Okay. Great. Good. Please don't expect me to miss any sleep over this, okay? Cause, and no, it's actually not going to affect my appetite. So aside from that, no problems here.
Thank you, Sherry.
You are most welcome. Anytime. Good night.
Until next time, then.
Pardon me?
Jerry, I think she hung up.
Oh, she went away. Okay.
She went away.
Well, we left on good terms, so.
We left on good terms. Disidentification is a great term to leave on.
Isn't it just the best?
It's the best.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing that I love about that is that, and the thing I love about, you know, Beth calling in, of course, you know, most of that sounds like it happened after she called in. But putting ourselves in that kind of position for somebody to reflect us or guide us or mirror us or, you know, whatever it is that goes on when we put ourselves in a sangha position, conditioning just can't hold up against it. You know, it tries it for a little while. Somebody's just watching it do what it does, kind of calling it on it, and then pretty soon it just goes, okay, you know, I'll get you later. the perfect expression for it, catch you later. but in the moment, it just can't sustain itself.
Very yes. Good. Yes. I'm having that experience at the monastery now of putting myself in the place of guidance where I'm going to get guidance kind of whether I want it or not.
Yes.
And there's a real gratitude for putting myself in that place so that I will receive that.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And the thing that makes it so beautiful is that egocentric karmic conditioning would have, in this case you, would have you believe that practice is unsafe for you and that really you're only safe when you're with it, you know, hanging out with it. Doing what it tells you is real and right and important because it's really the only one who deeply cares about your well-being. And then we move into that place, as Beth just did, as others, you know, who call in do, as people experience at the monastery on retreat, you move into that place of being open and vulnerable. And suddenly, egocentric karmic conditioning falls away, and you realize that the only place that you're ever actually going to be safe is defenseless in the moment. It's
wow.
A beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing. Sherry, it's been a beautiful show.
I know. We didn't do too well with those last two people, so
yes.
I hope they'll forgive us and call back.
Yes, we are over time, and I'm strongly encourage them and welcome them to call in early next week.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Talk to you then.
Okay. Good night.
Bye.